Yerik, also Unig in some texts, Yerik and Unig, same thing, or Eric, which is how the Bible, the Old Testament, the Torah, refer to it. What Yerik is the city where Andrew's residence was built. And in this residence, of course, was a giant ziggurat, pyramid shape, that was massive. It was all built by little mud bricks about the size of your foot, maybe a little bigger. And you can't even imagine how many of those bricks it would take to build this city or this ziggurat. And that's what it was built of. You can't even imagine how much good soil was used to do that. But indeed, they used a lot of soil and they built a lot of buildings. So as they colonized the earth. So Yerik was one of the main cities, and it held the top position under certain kings. So as you look at Sumer, for instance, if you look at slide one on the slideshow, if you hit refresh, the slideshow will restart. If you put your cursor on the artifact or the picture you're looking at, a brief description will pop up. If that description is in your way, put your cursor on the opposite picture or artifact, and it still holds the slideshow from continuing, and it now gives you a full view of the one you were originally viewing. So as we view number one and put our cursor on 1A, you'll see two rivers. One is the Euphrates and the other is the Tigris. And those two rivers come down and dump into the Persian Gulf. And if you look at the Persian Gulf and come up, come north, you'll see Ur, then Eridu. Ur is a Nanner city-state. Eridu is Zinki city-state. Larsa, I'm not sure. I think that's Hutus. And Yerik. Yerik is Anu's. When Anu visits Earth, that's it. That's his residence. Massive and impressive for the king of Nibiru. And while he would be on Earth, one of his favorite mistresses while here is Inanna, everybody's favorite mistress. But Anu and Inanna would be together in Yerik. When Anu started to come less and less to Earth, he eventually just gave his temple and the city and the realm over the kings and high priests of that city. So she is the new patron god of Yerik after Anu comes to Earth less and less until he just doesn't come anymore. So, not needed. So what you're looking at are many of the city-states. The main ones were built along the Tigris and the Euphrates. Now, in the middle there, you'll find other ones that are quite important. And all of these can be viewed, not all, but the main ones from Sumer can be viewed from right here on this website. Okay, as we go through the slideshow, you will see, and by the way, there's an arrow if you on the right, if you wish to increase the speed. There's an arrow on the left if you wish to rewind the well, move back one on the artifacts. As we get to artifact 1BB, you'll see a stela of a female goddess. That goddess is Nensun. Nensun, you can identify her with her hands and arms up in praise. And what she is doing in many, many of these times is she is arms in praise, speaking to the god Anu, which would be her uncle, or one of the other gods, saying, my son, who is a giant mixed breed, my son is ready to be king. She had three sons that she did this and put in positions. Gilgamesh from Uruk, Guda from Lagash, and Ur-Nammu from Ur. And these were early kings. They were all giant, semi-divine mixed breeds. She is the mother of three of these kings, those heroes of old, men of renown, as Genesis 6 would call them, the Nephilim. Anyway, this is Nensun, and you can tell the goddesses or gods because they always have, at least the descendants of the king, they always have the royal crown of animal horns that they wear. So here she is, hands in praise, wearing the animal horns, and this is her main image right there. And you will see as we go through hers, which you can find on the main page. Artifact 1E is a black and white. I believe this was on the side of a cliff or something, a wall. I think it's on the side of a cliff. Anyway, what you're looking at is a parade of a dad who is in the rear and his spouse, Shala, and Inanna. Inanna sitting up front. And so they're being carried in procession, probably down the street or through the gates to their hotel residences in some other city state. If someone was to visit a dad in his city state, there would most likely be other temples there. And those temples would be a hotel-like residence for his brother, his uncle, or whoever comes to visit him in his city's area of responsibility. So I just use that as an example. So you would find Inanna coming from Uruk. Okay? Excuse me. These big mountains of dirt that you see, that's the residence of Anu. And we'll see as it's discovered and as we go through the slideshows and evacuations, some nice photos of it. You can see how vast it is on a wide plain, the fertile lands between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates. You start to see a stairway develop. And artifact 2I is one of my favorites of on this. You're really getting a picture here of what is to come as they keep digging. Keep excavating. It takes a long time to get it all. And then the city. You know, first the ziggurat, then you start doing the city. That's a lot. It takes a long time. So there are pictures here of the mud bricks, and that's just a floor, a courtyard, or, you know, something of that nature. And you've got huge, long stairways. You have gigantic mountains made of those mud bricks. That's just hard to believe. Now, the first ones were made by the gods. And then later, and you would find, of course, Ningazita being one of the main, if not the main, architect on every one of these. But they would be the residences, and they would live there for a long, long time. So as the residences would need repairs, you would see kings during the centuries, during the millennia, they would be making repairs on certain temple residences. So the upkeep was pretty much to the kings, and the original construction was pretty much to the gods. And the design, obviously, is the gods. If you look at the painting or sketch in 3D, this will give you an idea what it looked like somewhat new. And 3C next to it is another sketch, black and white, and you can see the procession of people going to a stairway. Well, here's how that stairway works. Nobody goes up that stairway to the house of King Anu unless they're invited. And if an earthling, who is very rarely, if ever, invited to come up that stairway, it's a real easy thing to prevent him from coming up there. So the aliens, the gods, the giants that look just like us, who live there, they are isolated from the earthlings by this long stairway. Now, there may be other entrances. For instance, if they land on the top with their flying apparatus and then enter from the top. But, and again, avoiding the earthlings. So you see this happening here with this long stairway. Visiting gods would come up this stairway. Kings and high priests would come up and down that stairway. Now, the king would always be a mixed breed Nephilim, semi-divine, demigod, whatever you want to call them. They were the first kings. So there are giants towering over the earthlings. The earthling could easily tell who their leader is of this city, the king. And they could easily tell who their high priest is. He's a giant, and he's the leader of that house, of that temple. That high priest is the butler to the god who lives there. Whatever his meals are, or whatever his needs are, clothes, you name it. Setting up preparations for visitors, whatever it is, he would run through the butler. And that butler has a relationship with that god. And that king would see the god every so often. He'd pick up the rules and the laws for the earthlings down below. And the king is the go-between, and he's a semi-giant, semi-divine, lives much longer than the earthlings, but not as long as the gods. So he's kind of a mixture, which he is, and therefore he is placed as a go-between between the god who lives in these ziggurats and the earthlings down below. The other go-between is the high priest. And that keeps the earthlings away from the gods directly. There's no reason for that, because everything, all directives are handed through those mixed breeds. You'll even see an artifact discovered there that's a map of the city. That's kind of unique. And we're talking an ancient city here, okay? Some of these walls, you'll see, for instance, on number 5, there's a carving of a male and female goddess. Look how tall they are. They're obviously depicting a giant on these walls. Okay, more walls to the city. That wall with the giant sculptures are probably on the inside. There is an artifact. Many, many thousands of artifacts are discovered here. I'm just showing you a couple. There's one here of Ninsun with wings. Well, the wings depict flight. So Ninsun does not have wings grown on the back of her. No, the wing is telling you that she can get in a flying machine and fly. Anyone that has wings, what they're saying is they have the ability to fly, not with wings, but with a flying machine. Today, all our pilots get their wings before they're allowed to solo. Wings is your proof of ability to fly. It doesn't mean the pilot can flap his wings and fly, but he sure got his wings on. Okay, so as we go through these artifacts, some of them are just skip through so you get a view. Others you might find a little interesting. For instance, 6D. 6D is a round rock carved into a cylinder, a rock. And on that cylinder, a reverse carving of a seam. So the gods, because man could not do this, the gods are shaping this rock, a seam that they want recorded for all time. They will place on this rock and then roll it across wet clay. The negative imprint on the rock will be a positive on the wet clay, and what you've just produced is a copy machine or a newspaper if you put print in there on that rock. We'll call it a cylinder seal. So in this one on 6D, you see Dumuzi and his spouse, Inanna, feeding the cows and the sheep. That was their job. Dumuzi is the shepherd. He was in charge. His realm of responsibility were raising the cows and, you know, tending the flocks. Okay, and then you'll see other artifacts, war, or whatever the scene is. Some of these artifacts, for instance, 6F, doesn't look like a very good carving. It's just not as well done in detail at all as the one next to it, or most of these that you see. Now take a look at 6G while you look at 6F. 6G, now you're talking about the cylinder seal, reverse card, printed out as a scene, and there is far greater detail on that scene than there is in the other, and the facial features and so forth are far better than the other. I believe what you're looking at in 6F is man learning to produce these artifacts, to produce these newspapers or whatever you want to call them. Here's the scene. that they can literally reproduce and send out to all the city states. And all the high priests or all the kings, they all have a copy of what happened. Now, the same would go for texts. They would all have a copy of whatever text these gods would write. And then many years later, the gods taught man to become a scribe. And we can go through that right here on this website as you keep observing what is offered to you. So again, you're seeing cylinder sealed on clay after cylinder sealed on clay. And it's endless how many times you can print that scene. These cylinder seals, and you see tons of them, these cylinder seals have lasted thousands and thousands and thousands of years. They go back like 4,000 BC, 3,000 BC, this type of thing. And, well, I'll show you. So anyway, you got an artifact like 6K. You'll see a whole bunch of little bitty stelas or what have you of a naked lady. That is the goddess of love and war. Here she is depicted as the goddess of love, and that is Inanna, who lives in Uruk, takes over Anu's ziggurat, as Anu no longer needs it because he's not coming to Earth. She's his favorite mistress. That's who's got it. There's a text concerning that. It's, as we keep looking, here's a giant god receiving food and drink. Here's a giant vase, and on that vase are several scenes. And some of these partials, you're looking at partial scenes that are on that vase. And again, you'll see Inanna, you'll see Nensan. These are the gods that are residing in that city. They're the patrons. Okay, so some of these artifacts are interesting. Some of them may not be. Artifact 7D is an interesting artifact. Bubba, in which you will find later. 7F. If you take a look at that, I believe what you're looking at are communication towers. There are three of them. Now, they had communications between city-state and city-state. All of the gods could easily communicate with each other, no matter where they were. I'm not sure if everyone could, but at least the Earth Colony Commander Inlil could communicate directly with his father, the King Anu. Therefore, there's long-distance communications between Earth and Nibiru. There's communications between Earth and Mars, which is a way station that was set up by them. And there's communications between Earth and Earth. You will see lots of these. What I suggest are antennas for communications. Communication towers. Okay, artifacts as vases, artifacts as water dishes, food dishes. Many, many different types of artifacts. Entire walls are artifacts. I just give you a small variety of the artifacts of Uruk. Now, below this slideshow, you'll see Uruk quotes out of text, but here's a text that says, Inanna sees the Inanna. Well, that's what I was talking about. Anu hands it over, although this text might describe it differently, but Anu is not using it. He hands it over to his favorite girl, Inanna. I suggest you read this. That's why it's triple starred. The triple stars are the most important, and then you can go down from there. The lament for Yurik, some of these laments are extremely important to read. Okay, do Sumerian kings list? Please, please take a look at that. You'll see a list of kings starting prior to the flood. And I'll click on it right now and show you. There is the artifact of the king's list. It was discovered in Kish, which is the city-state where Ninhursag is the patron goddess. Anyway, on this artifact, or these artifacts, you'll find the list of kings, the heroes of old, men of renown, the Nephilim that were on the earth in those days and the days after, when the sons of God, came down and had sex with the daughters of men. And they had children by them. And the children became the heroes of old, men of renown. Well, they're talking about a children that's a mix of the gods who came down and the earthling women. That means they produced demigods, giant mixed breeds. And right here is the artifact telling you who the first leaders are of the earthlings on earth. So scroll down and you start to read the text. I'll just read you a little bit here. After the kingship descended from heaven, otherwise kingship did not exist on earth. Kingship, the entire concept comes from these gods because they use kingship for their leadership on their planet. Their entire planet is ruled by one king, King Anu. So, and this is King Anu Ziggurat we're looking at in Yurik. Anyway, kingship descends from heaven and it starts in Eridu, which is Inki City, way down there by the Persian Gulf. And then here's a king, Alulam. And he rules for 28,800 years. Oh, that can't be real. That has to be a mistake, right? Let's look at it this way. Their planet is caught in our solar system. It comes through our solar system, crosses through, whatever you want to call it. The plus sign is a symbol of their planet crossing through our solar system. And where it crosses, it passes right on the outside of Mars, right by the asteroid belt. As a matter of fact, the asteroid belt is the missing half of Earth. If you flip the globe on it upside down, you'll see half of Earth is missing and filled in with water. And, well, that half that's missing is the asteroid belt. Their planet comes through our solar system right there. You can go to Nibiru's page, planet Nibiru, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So on their planet, kingship was developed. It's a one-world order for them. Well, when they came to Earth to colonize, and they finally got replacement workers called Earthlings, which they had to fashion, and when they did, they fashioned Earthlings into their image. That is why we look like them, And we are there to replace the load of the work the gods have been carrying and to place it on the back of man. That is the entire purpose of our existence at that time, was to simply do the work that the gods are tired of doing as they colonize Earth. So all of a sudden, Earthlings have beautiful women. They don't have enough women anywhere on this planet. They're sending men workers. The only females are relatives to the king. Well, she's not available to the common alien worker. She's of the royal family, so that's where she'll be staying. And Inanna stays in Uruk, and then Sun stays in Uruk. So as you look, you're looking at 28,800 years. Their planet comes through by the asteroid belt and goes way out into space in an elongated orbit, way out there. And then as it comes back through, it takes 3,600 years approximately for them to circle the sun. That's 1 year for them of aging. For us, in the time it takes for them to go around once, we went around the sun 3,600 times. We age 3,600 years. They age 1 year. One. So to us, they are immortal. Okay? And when they mix their clock with the Earthling clock, they produce a demigod who lives a very long time, like they do. Not as long as they do, but far, far longer than an Earthling. These are the new beings, new breeds of authority over mankind. So here starts the text that I showed you on those artifacts, and it just simply lists people we have no idea who they are or where they came from. This is telling you, not details, but it's telling you who, what, when, and where. That's a must read. I don't care who you are. If you're interested in Mesopotamia, you must read this text, period. And when you see these kings that lasted so long, know that that is only up to the flood. From the flood on, man's, the mixed breeds, existence, their rule of kingship becomes 400, 800, maybe even 1,000 years, okay? That's after the flood. And then it dwindles down into 400 years and dwindles down into finally 120. Abraham, for example, the biblical hero, which started the Hebrews, Islam, and Christianity, all as Abraham as its father, he married his sister. His sister is pregnant at age 100. When you're a giant mixed breed, that's very, very possible. But he won't live to be 36,000 years old, no. But I guarantee you, Abraham might have lived a little longer than the Earthlings. And same with his sister wife. That's why he has a sister wife, because the bloodline of the gods, you don't want to dilute it, so you marry your sister, your half-sister, and if you have none of those, you marry your first cousin. if you want an heir that has all the benefits of being bigger, stronger, faster, smarter, and live much longer than the earthlings, and placed in positions of authority. So I leave a little tidbit from Genesis. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, men of renown. Well, here we go. The first slideshow is artifacts pertaining to Meskhet-Gasher and Enmerkar. These are some of the first, if not the very first, kings in Europe. Okay? So again, and the Lord God said, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil, and living forever. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever. And so then it's after the flood and kings rule for much shorter periods. Instead of 28,000 years, it might be 1,000 years. So here comes Meskhet-Gasher, and he's around 2900 B.C. I have no texts on him, unfortunately. Enmerkar, by the way, no, let me continue. Enmerkar, I believe, is the second king of Uruk. And under Enmerkar, I have in parentheses, he is Utu's giant, semi-divine, mixed breed, demigod, whatever you want to call it. He is Utu's grandson, who is king of Uruk. He ruled 900 years. You see what I'm saying? So, like Masudah's law in the Torah or Old Testament and many of the other from the first 10 generations down to Noah, they all married their sister, by the way, half-sister or first cousin, but they lived or ruled 1,000 years or very close to that. Here is Enmerkar doing the same thing. Sometimes you wonder if some of them might be the same kings. The same heroes of old. Anyway, Enmerkar, there we go. Right down the line, you'll see a 2-star and a 3-star under Enmerkar. 3-star is Enmerkar and the Lord of Arana. Well, if you want to pick up information about the gods and their relationship to their mixed breed offspring, here's where you do it. And look for the must read 3-star, 2-star, and 1-star texts. And then if you keep coming back, of course, study every artifact and read all the texts. It's worth it. To me, it was well worth it. So I'm sharing it with everyone, and I hope you enjoy it. Now, let's continue. You scroll down and you run into Logalbanda. Logalbanda is, what, the third king of Uruk? Let's see, Logalbanda is Ninhursag's giant, semi-divine, mixed-breed son. Giant demigod, made king of Uruk. And he espouses Ninsun. So the giant hero of old marries a female goddess. That's a switch. Instead of the male gods with the females, here is a female goddess with the male. Semi-divine, not earthlings. They're not mating with earthlings. They're mating with the semi-divine, the go-betweens. Anyway, married to a goddess, you're doing pretty good. You won't live as long as her, but this guy's going to live a long time. She's going to see to it, you know, and get all the advantages she can for him. Also, they have three sons, and I'm sure many other children, but they have three sons that were appointed to kingships, important kingships, where it might be the supreme city-state of the period, okay? One would be the capital, and the capital will move around, and you read about that if you read the King's List. Anyway, as we go through Logalbanda, I strongly suggest you read Logalbanda in the Mountain Cave, and I also suggest Logalbanda in the Ensign Bird. Next is Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh is probably the most known, most popular ancient king. It's after the flood, but he is the son of Ninsun and Logalbanda. I just described that. Here is one of the sons. He is a giant. He has all the advantages. He's two-thirds divine. And comes in right after his father, Logalbanda. And when you look at these artifacts, well, let's look at, say, artifact 8i. If you have time, find 8i, pause the slideshow. It's just an example. 8i will give you gods and goddesses, and it will give you a king. Now, 8i gives you even a king and a beast that was fashioned to be the king's companion. And he's the same size as the king, because the king, with all his advantages, he was taking advantage of all the women in the city of Uruk. If you wanted to get married, you laid with the king Gilgamesh before you married. Well, that's not very popular. And that had to come to an end. Well, who's going to challenge this giant Gilgamesh? So this creature, Enkidu, was fashioned, and he was fashioned to wrestle Gilgamesh so that he understands he's not the only one around that has these abilities. And there's many, many texts concerning Gilgamesh, Enkidu, and the gods and goddesses. These are important artifacts. They all are depicting a particular scene that happened thousands of years B.C., practically 3,000 years B.C. So this is a period when the gods walked with the mixed breeds on Earth. When the earthlings on Earth saw that the gods were on Earth and what they were doing and their relationships with the high priest and with the king. Now, the earthling doesn't have a clue what the gods are talking about or doing, but they can observe them flying. They can observe them in processions. They can observe what's going on around the ziggurat. And let's face it, if King Anu wants to go to the shopping center, an earthling might see him shopping for a scarf. That was a joke. Anyway, Gilgamesh, as you go through, you'll see my description of him, where it says he's Ninsun's and Logalbanda's son, made king of Uruk. And according to this particular clock, he rules 126 years. Other texts, he'll rule 425 years. but you can see the years are starting to dwindle, okay? And Gilgamesh is a favored son here. So as we go down, you'll see the Epic of Gilgamesh. Well, this particular text is taught in college. So if you are familiar with Gilgamesh, you probably picked him up in college with this text. So I strongly, strongly recommend you read everything here that I'm showing you on Gilgamesh that is in green. If it's three times written, a must, and a must, with three stars each, that's very rare. I do that. That means it is one of the most important I have to show you to read. He Who Saw Everything, the Epic of Gilgamesh, I strongly suggest it. That's where information is. Gilgamesh and Aga, that's a one star. Anyway, next slideshow under Gilgamesh is his companion Enkidu. And you'll see stella after stella and cylinder seal after cylinder seal artifact of Enkidu, who's like half god and half bull beast. He's a brute, is what he is, and a wild man living in the woods until tamed by a temple priestess. Then he's brought into the city and becomes the companion of Gilgamesh. Very interesting text, I strongly recommend. Under Enkidu, there are other texts, and I tell you who Enkidu is. He's Enki, and then Herzog's creation. Created to curb Gilgamesh being out of line in many regards, and also to protect Gilgamesh for his long journey. They become great friends. The priestess Shamhat and Enkidu were talking about Enkidu becoming tamed through sex of a priestess who is of the temple. High priests, priestesses, usually you're talking about and especially in this period, a mixed breed appointed to positions of authority over the earthlings. High priest, priest, high priestess, priestess, king. Okay. And then sometimes scribe, and then, you know, so on and so forth. They all had their realm of responsibility, from digging the canals and the irrigation for the fields, to mining the gold, to shipping it to Mars. I mean, it was a big operation. There were somewhere around 900 of them, 300 in the mines, 300 in the Garden of Eden, 300 on Mars, plus in space. They were the space truckers hauling goods to Nibiru and supplies back to Earth colony. Next is the Hulupa tree, two stars. Gilgamesh, Enkidu, and the Netherworld. Well, that's the underworld. If you want to see a little that's written about the underworld in this particular text, it's right here. Next slideshow is of Hubbubba. Hubbubba is a creature probably designed by Enlil, but he's a creature that Enlil uses to protect his cedar forest, which is where Enlil, he loves the cedar. So he protects that forest. There's cedar in just about every one of these ziggurat homes of the gods. They like the aroma. So anyway, Enlil has this guardian of the forest. Nobody's going to cut these down, I guess. I think there's more to it than just the forest. I think he's protecting everything in the Laz in this area. Anyway, here's artifact after artifact of Hawawa and or Humbaba in action in a scene or just simply on a stella or a bust. There's a couple of texts, Gilgamesh and the creature, two-star and a one-star. Next is the Bull of Heaven, which is Anu's creature. You'll find little is known about this, but it's written about several times or mentioned in texts. And this artifact will give you an idea of the Bull of Heaven. Okay, I mean, these artifacts, when you look at that, that is thousands of years old. Look at artifact number 9. Thousands of years old. Look at the detail it still has. And there is a tremendous scene going on here. They want it recorded. There's probably a text that goes with this scene. And that text just might be Gilgamesh and the Bull of Heaven. See what I'm saying? Some of these artifacts are right out of text. Some of them are out of text I don't have. And some of them are just simply there to give you an image. Very important. Thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of artifacts discovered in these city-states, first cities on Earth. First civilization of mankind, first everything. It comes from Mesopotamia because that's where the gods settled when they first arrived. And they started building Earth colony and everything it takes to survive here while they get the gold and other minerals that they want. And there's lots of DNA here. Many reasons to be on Earth. Their main reason was the gold. They use it to patch a hole in that is causing loss of atmosphere. The hole was caused by all the wars they had forming into a one world order. Much damage to the planet as they warred against each other. Conquering and conquering until finally there's just one king. Okay, here's some kings that later followed Gilgamesh in different texts or just quotes. Look for the green ones. If you're short on time, read the green ones first. And there's artifacts of these guys as well as whatever is written. I'll lay it out there. The Victory of Utu-Hegel, or Poem of Utu-Hegel, I give that a double star. Check it out. There's information there. Okay, well, that gives you Uruk, and I don't know what to tell you other than if you take the Sumerian King's List, and you keep that handy, and you start looking at these city-states and these kings, you're going to get a real good feel of what our history really was. All this knowledge has been hidden from us for thousands of years. At least 2,500 years it's been hidden. What is it they don't want us to know? That gods came down to Earth, and that's where we got the concept of God from these giants that came down and colonized the Earth and then fashioned us to become their helpers, their worker breed. They eventually become quite fond of us. Enlil becomes totally disgusted with Enki doing his mixed breed, half animal this, half animal that, and the Nephilim, Enlil is unhappy about the Nephilim. All of these new races of creatures started by Enki. You have Nephilim as a combination of Earthling and God, and you have the Earthling, which was simply Homo erectus, quickly updated, modified to become Homo sapien, just about overnight. It takes about 50,000 years in evolution. That's overnight. So man goes from the cave to these cities right here, living underneath the God at his feet. Paying homage to that God at all times through the king and through the high priest. And those who do not remain loyal to that God may find that they have lost their power or lost their life or were tortured badly. Do not mess with the gods. That was well known all throughout BC history. And then and the Jesus event happens, and history again is awakened. And Jesus, and starting again, under the Jesus events, as Jesus stated himself, and if you take a quick study here and think about it, he says that his father's kingship was in heaven. Well, there are a lot of planets in the heavens. And I imagine there's a lot of kingships because there's something like a billion Earths. So they call it the sweet spot or whatever. Like a billion planets that seem to exist out there, orbiting stars that are in the sweet spot where the temperature would be proper to gain humidity and livable climate, livable conditions, oxygen possibly. This is how they discovered Earth. We happen to be in the sweet spot. Mars at once had an atmosphere. I'm sure there was something left to it when they arrived. And when you see all those scars on Mars, you're talking about the asteroids pounding Mars, pounding Earth. Well, that came from a collision. And I suggest you go to Marduk's page or Babylon and you read about that. It's called the Enuma Elish. So, here you're looking at Uruk. There are many, many more city-states. I really appreciate you coming and checking me out here. A lot of time, many, many years went into this. I hope you enjoyed it. There are things here, I guarantee you, you've never seen organized like this or as much of it. So I'm proud of it. I'm very pleased you came, and I want to thank you again. Please come back. There's much more to see. Thank you.